This is episode 397 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, August the 13th, 2012.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, in your backyard, and worldwide on the pod.
This is an exciting day in the history of the NBN.
Copyright.gov is down. FBI.gov is next to go.
The world is in trouble. There is no Wikipedia.
Who here has an iPhone? Who here has a BlackBerry? Who here uses Gmail? Well, you're all screwed.
So we'll be monitoring this very closely. No one will pay for these rights if they can't find a way to make money off them.
Copyright is such a big issue. Legislation as 2006 is already outdated by the new technologies.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. On the show today, hackers are doing what hackers do best, and last week it was ASIO's turn, along with one of the world's biggest game developers, Blizzard. Using data to send voice on a telephony system isn't new, and in the United States and Korea, we're starting to see voice over LTE usage rise. That's the new 4G technology now being rolled out by local carriers. But according to the local telcos, it's still a couple of years off here in Australia. Also this week, Google cops a whopper of a fine for mixing cookies with Safari. Apple tightens its policies after the Journo hack last week, and the ACCC cracks down on Wi-Fi-ready TVs. There's the latest in gaming, and don't forget there's the usual Oddspot gadget app and website of the week. That's all to come on today's edition of Tech Talk Radio. First up, though, here's this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio news desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, the NBN's construction cost increases by $4.6 billion over the next 10 years. Hackers attack ASIO and defence websites. Smirnoff is told to clean up its Facebook page. And a new invention by Australian engineers will improve aviation safety. Welcome to Tech Talk News. The construction cost of the national broadband network has increased by $4.6 billion over the next 10 years. Additionally, NBN Co. will realise more revenue from 2018, up by $1.5 billion, according to an updated corporate plan covering from now to the end of 2015, which was released last week. The updated plan revealed about 13,500 premises were connected via fibre, fixed wireless or satellite in June, and a total of 92,000 will be connected by the middle of 2013. NBN Co. expects about 500,000 premises will be connected by the end of 2014. Minister for Communications, Senator the Honourable Stephen Conroy, said the budget adjustment was minor in nature.
The plan being released today confirms the project is on track. The plan released today, therefore, is NBN Co.'s first operational plan. The forecasts in this plan are the targets against which the progress of the NBN can be measured. NBN Co.'s first operational plan confirms that the NBN is a sound investment that will pay its way and generate a 7% return to the taxpayer.
NBN Co.'s Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Mike Quigley, said the increases were due in part to an $800 million deal with Optus, which had not been included in the previous corporate plan, which had been released in December 2010. Mr. Quigley also announced that premises would now be connected by default and customers could opt out of installation if desired. NBN opponents were quick to jump on the budget announcement, critical of the price increase and questioning the value of the NBN to Australians. The Federal Opposition's communications spokesman, Mr. Malcolm Turnbull, on ABC Radio.
This is a dramatically failed project. It's falling behind every benchmark they've set, except for one, which is the expenditure, in which case they're spending considerably more than they'd originally forecast. And this is, frankly, just a consequence of undertaking a project like this with no budget.
To other news this week, hackers have crippled the website of Australia's security and intelligence organisation, ASIO. Infamous hacking group Anonymous claimed responsibility for the attack, which left ASIO's public web server offline for at least half an hour on Friday last week. The federal government agency released a statement which said it was aware that there may have been some technical issues with its public website, but reassured the public that it did not host any classified information on it and any disruption would not present a risk to ASIO's business. Anonymous was recently in Australian IT news after the group acquired customer data records from AAPT and published these on a website. At the time, Anonymous said the attack against AAPT was intended to highlight the dangers of a proposal to force telcos to store Australians' web history for up to 2 years. The Australian Information Commissioner, Professor John McMillan, confirmed his office had opened an investigation into the AAPT incident after customer data had apparently been compromised. Anonymous also announced last week it had been trying to hack the website of the Defence Signals Directorate. The DSD performs an information security role for branches of the Australian Defence Force, as well as a signals intelligence role to support military and strategic decision-making. It's understood that the planned attack against the DSD website was unsuccessful. The Advertising Standards Bureau says that vodka manufacturer Smirnoff is ultimately responsible for all content posted on its Facebook page, including user-generated comments. The Bureau explained its decision by reasoning a Facebook page was being used as a marketing communication tool when used by an advertiser, and that accordingly anything on the page falls within the jurisdiction of the Advertiser Code of Ethics for industry complaints. The ruling was made after complaints were received by the Advertising Standards Bureau in relation to publicly generated content on the official Smirnoff Vodka Facebook page, which allegedly included obscene, sexist and racist remarks, as well as depictions of irresponsible alcohol consumption. Analysts say the decision has massive implications for any business running active social media campaigns. And a new laser-equipped air speed sensor has been developed by Australian engineers. Existing air speed sensors, known as pitot tubes, have often been the focus of air crash investigations because of the tendency for ice to build up and occlude intake holes. Now, two doctors from the University of New South Wales have developed an air speed sensor using basic lasers, such as those found in the humble computer mouse, and noted that none of the important components are exposed to weather. In the new laser device, a sensor detects the Doppler shift of photons in the laser beam as they are absorbed by oxygen molecules in the air. Dr. Sean O'Byrne told the ABC that, while not designed to replace pitot tubes, the new laser speed sensor would be a low-cost measure to augment pitot tubes, giving pilots more confidence in their readings and helping to guard against fatal crashes. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Is that a MacBook Air?
No.
Is that a MacBook Pro?
Yes.
It's like a general-purpose embedded controller.
How long's this been going on?
Well, once you've had a taste of Foxtel's multi-channel goodness during the Olympic coverage, you'll never let Eddie Maguire call the shots in your lounge room again.
Can we have less swimming, repeats of swimming, commentary on swimming, swimming and close-ups of swimming?
And before we know it, it'll start surfacing around the place mm-hmm. and people are going to go, what the hell am I going to do with this?
I feel lighter and faster already. Cruise balance, mass is ejected and Mars is pulling me in.
Yeah, that's pretty low power consumption.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a great idea. Things like that.
Sounds like a recipe for disaster to me.
Well,
I don't like that.
Can't say that.
Why not?
No. Okay.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the show that is Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. The boys have it tonight.
No girls in the studio to...
Let's just check, but I think we've had a quick whip around. And no, she's not here this evening. She has what Dr. Ron has had during the course of the week, and Dr. Ron has done his Phoenix impersonation and risen from the ashes.
The dead, yes.
Hello, Andrew. No, I'm not that bad. How are you, Andrew? How are you, Graham?
Look, I'm better. My immune system's up. I think I had the sniffles a while back, so do your worst. But you had a double whack of it, and that's a bit of a bummer, really. So you've
completely
been
written off last week. Totally written it off altogether. So we'll just try again now. And yeah, Lena's not feeling well, unfortunately, she's not in this week. It's her turn.
Did you lick each other? Because she threatened to lick you, and you got sick.
Oh, well, you know, there's a lot of love in the studio.
It is, and you sit so close together.
We do.
All three of you over on the other side of the panel.
Yeah.
Anyway, I've had the tech week from hell, but we'll talk about that very shortly. Oh, it's been a nasty... Actually, there is a... Everything's come out roses.
Well, tell us about your tech week from hell.
Which side would you like? Would you like my iNet side, or would you like my Apple side?
Let's start with the iNet side, because I get in trouble whenever Apple gets mentioned.
Ordinarily, I would say iNet are one of the most stable, reliable, professional ISPs.
And I
that
would,
there is.
I would concur with you. And I wouldn't change that. You know what I mean? I'd still say the same way. I've had really good dealings with the iNet support team, which has been great. So,
but why did you need the iNet support team? What happened?
Well, I'll send a cheerio out first. Chris, who's in New Zealand, this is how they work. They follow time zones. And then over on the other side of the land, there's Jess, and she was in Perth. And we feel like we've been all good buddies for so long. We sit there and have coffees this morning, and you boot your end, I'll boot my end, and do all that sort of stuff. So it was quite good. But anyway, the long and short of it, and I'll go short of it because you don't want the long of it because it's been going for days.
That lasted a week. Yep.
Yeah. Last Thursday, I have two services on iNet, one at the office and the other at the other office, and both of them within 24 hours simultaneously decided to fall over. As a result, when I say fall over, I could connect, I could authenticate, everything was hunky-dory, but I couldn't get beyond about three hops down the track. So I couldn't browse a website. I couldn't use my VoIP service.
Oh, could you see outside of the iNet network?
I couldn't see a web page.
Could you see the iNet web page?
No, I couldn't.
There you go. So you couldn't see much of anything at all.
Yeah, fundamental.
But if I chose somewhere and did a trace route to it, which is like, it's sort of saying, please tell me all the servers you're going through on the way to the destination of the web service that I've chosen, it would get about three hops in. So it would get out of my router, it would get through the iNet gateway, and it would get to another server, and that was as far as it would get.
So there's not much you can do from that point of view. You need to be on the phone to them saying, fix my routing, please.
I did. But the thing is, and this is the really strange thing, it happened to both services, geospatially separated by about 20 kilometres, and within 24 hours of each other. Now, I don't want to put a conspiracy hat on or anything like that, but you've got to realise that there is some... Is it coincidental?
No, I wouldn't have thought so. A fault like that, it's pretty... For it just to suddenly happen and then happen on another iNet service
and these devices,
shortly afterwards.
These modems, both of them, been working flawlessly for about 4 years on the same provider.
Yeah, but what you described doesn't immediately sound like a modem problem.
No.
No. It sounds like a problem deeper in the network. And my suspicion is that the reason that two of your services were both simultaneously affected would be that many, many services were simultaneously affected.
Mm.
A great many, perhaps.
Yeah, well...
Perhaps a stateful.
Yeah, no, it wasn't quite that bad, from what I can understand. They said, oh, no, there's nothing interesting. But the plot thickened. We eventually got them back up and running by changing the static IPs, and are no longer what they were. They're different IP addresses now.
Right.
So I've been doing some pretty frantic programming of other services across the course of the weekend.
That'd...
And, yes, the long and short of it today is that I then had two routers which thought they were each other. So the IP address for one office was on one and the IP for the other. So they were transposed. You know what I mean?
Oh.
It's a bit like, you know, picking up your wife's car keys and trying to get into your car. It just didn't work.
No, it won't work at all.
And vice versa. So anyway, we resolved that issue.
And did they explain what the problem was? Because that's like a Band-Aid cure. If that's fixed, that's good.
Yeah, well, we can't explain the hopping issue, but we got around that. We put some new firmware on some modems and got them all up and running again. So whether there was something at a fundamentally network level, I don't know. But what I can say is that the service from the support team has been really good. I do have one criticism.
That's what you really want to hear. Problems come up. The internet is the internet. Problems are going to happen.
Techie people like us.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
It was funny. Jess came up and said, oh, I do like talking to people who talk tech because it's so much easier. Is it the blue light flashing or is it the green light flashing or the red light flashing? Yeah. So I sort
but
of
that's
feel
the opposite of what I get with my ISP. If I talk to my ISP about anything more technical than a power switch, then they completely and utterly fail to understand what I'm on about.
Ah, okay. Is English their first language when you ring their call centre?
Sometimes.
Yeah? Yeah, it depends on the time of day too.
Mm.
But I guess that's what you do, these companies do now, to actually support. They'll move them
but
offshore.
But it's not about the English or not English. It's about their technical knowledge.
It is.
And I have this...
It's also the distance.
I've got an ongoing dispute with Telstra, an ongoing problem with one of my Telstra services. And when I ring... It's a Telstra mobile data service. And when I ring their support team, they don't know what an APN is.
Oh, that's a problem.
And they don't
that's
know sort of...
That's a fundamental problem.
That's right. And they don't know basic stuff like that. And they don't understand basic troubleshooting techniques. Now, I took the SIM out of that device and put it into this other device, didn't change any of the other configurations, and it worked. And yet, when I put this other SIM in, it doesn't work. Therefore, the problem is the configuration on the account, not the configuration of the device. Now, that's fairly straightforward for anyone in technology to follow. Well, you'd think so. It's very simple, and you swap one thing, in this case the SIM card, between two devices, and the fault follows the SIM.
You try to isolate where the fault is.
The fault follows the SIM, so the device that didn't work now does work, and the device that did work now doesn't.
Yeah, I think you got that. It's like with modems when you check it. You always need more than one modem in the house.
Yeah, you got to, and that way you can very quickly isolate which part of the network the problem is in, whether it's in my equipment or whether it's in their equipment. And I proved absolutely fundamentally it's in their equipment, and yet every time I talk to somebody, they want me to, you need to go in here and you need to change this setting, you need to make sure this is right. I've made sure all that's right, and they cannot comprehend that, and they don't know basic things. So you found an ISP that understands how things work when you ring their help desk, and that's fantastic.
Mm. Yeah. No, I couldn't speak more highly of them. As I say, Jess, who was over in WA, she was really good. And then we had Chris, who was in New Zealand. But, yeah, you ring the call centres, and I think they use South African ones, and, look, you could, depending on the time of day, you can ring anywhere. My only criticism of iiNet, there is one, is business hours is basically 9 to 6.
Yeah, that's,
other businesses
that can be a
run
problem.
Outside of that.
Yeah, that can be a problem, depending on your ISP, and you need to make sure that if you're on a... Sometimes some ISPs have business plans where you can pay to get a higher level of support.
Yeah, I'll put my hand up there. I do have a business plan.
And so does that mean you do get 24/7 support, or...?
Well, you get it everywhere else, but you get a different level. You get more personalised support.
Right.
iiNet is usually really good at bringing out timely technical bulletins and service information, service outage information. Do they have anything like that?
No. Not that I could connect and find out about, anyway. My mobile broadband got a pasting over the weekend.
Yeah, it would have.
And, of course, you know, like you do backups these days, we've all been talking about backups. Of course, as soon as a machine that hasn't done a backup for a day or two finds a portal, I can find my way through to the internet here, cop this. I think I used about 600 meg of my Telstra mobile broadband within the space of 40 minutes.
Yep.
You think two or three gigabytes a month is quite a lot on a mobile phone, but when you start to use it for home use.
Yes, careful what you tether, young Padawan.
You can go through 2 gigabytes in a day quite easily, can't you?
In less than
an hour quite easily.
Yeah, especially if you're on this new 4G LTE whiz-bangy stuff.
Yeah.
Can I tell you about my other... I think I've covered off...
So you got your problem fixed, you got everything back online.
But you still don't know what the problem was, which is infuriating.
The problem was clearly not in his network.
There were two problems. The first problem was the lack of connectivity, which we fiddled and... Yeah, but no, don't know the answer to it. The other network-related thing was IP swapping, which we did firmware updates and stuff like that and got it working again, but nonetheless. My other sojourn on the course of the week is I was dealing with the Apple Empire, which was an interesting experience. I dealt with them from a tech support level, and I dealt with them from a shop level.
Anyone who missed last week's show won't be aware, or they probably heard in the previously segment, just before we started the panel segment, you've bought yourself a MacBook Pro.
I do. Yes, I'm ambidextrous now. In my left hand, I have a PC. In my right hand, I have a Mac. Good, isn't it?
It's fantastic.
And let me tell you which one I grabbed on the weekend most of the time. Says he, pointing at the radio.
He's pointing to the Windows machine.
The Windows PC machine got a good workout.
But in your case, that's not because it's any technological reason. It's just that's what you're familiar with.
No, it is a technological reason.
What's the technological reason?
Just the ability to get in at you know, and ping and commands, get to those command levels and do all those command line things.
It's a Starnik style command line. It's much better than that. At command line,
pointing
level
on radio.
I'm pointing to the Apple machine and saying that if I was fault finding,
you'd be wanting to run
a terminal. And I had one of those Windows machines and one of those Apple machines.
You go to the Apple machine.
I'd go to my Linux machine actually, but but the next best thing would be the Apple machine that's got that same style of command prompt. I'd find that a lot more useful.
Now, one of the things I did when I did get this new machine, Graham, is I blazingly jumped from 10.7 to 10.8, which is the new mountain. Now I did it too quick,
because it was a brand spanking new operating system. It had been out a few hours when you upgraded.
Well, it wasn't so much that, but yes, I figured it was a fresh machine, why not do a fresh upgrade and do all that sort of stuff.
But you did it, now we covered this last week, you did it as an upgrade, not as a clean install too.
I did,
which is not what I would have done.
I did with 10.8.
Yeah.
The new operating system. 10.8.1 is just been seeded out too for developers to fix a lot of the bugs that it has. And yeah. I've found most of them.
And that's a normal process with operating systems.
Yeah, so that'll be out shortly. Yeah. But if you have the, there's the iLife package there, which consists of iMovie, iPhoto, and GarageBand, all on the one.
GarageBand.
Yeah, I said that in the Apple store on the weekend. And the,
GarageBand.
The girl looked at me in a very strange way. Obviously, hasn't listened to the show, but anyway.
doesn't know that in-joke. All right.
If you don't actually, you've got a, because it was a new machine, and the machine came with the software pre-built into
yeah.
it. And if you don't sort of like claim ownership of them and say, accept your T's and C's, it considers you having not adopted them or not saying, yeah, you want them. And then when you go to 10.8, you can't do the updates of those three particular programs because you needed to do the updates and agree to them in 10.7. So I had these, you know how you've got the wonderful little store, the app store, and it says you've got yeah. three or four upgrades waiting for you.
Yeah.
I had those, and I'd go upgrade. And it'd say, no, sorry, you have to log into the previous account, which you can't roll back to 10.7 to do.
Yeah.
So as a result, I spent several, I don't know, I spent half an hour in a shop, up at the Mac shop in Doncaster. Hi, guys. And then I spent on the phone talking to the guys up in Sydney. Ended up getting a couple of serial numbers for downloading these new things. So I solved my problem.
Okay.
So they just said, here, have these token keys. Put them in as a redemption.
Mm-hmm.
And problem solved. But
I wonder why it's that hard. That's odd, isn't it?
It's just the ecosystem. I'm getting used to it still, I think.
Mm. It's just one of those, another one of those things. I mean, we've seen different, but vaguely similar things go wrong with Windows updates, Windows upgrades too. Like if you upgraded to Windows XP from Windows 2000.
Yep.
Or to Windows 7 from Windows Vista, then little things like that will go wrong along the way as well. So that's probably, you know, to be expected. That's one of the reasons I wouldn't have done an upgrade install going from Mountain Lion to Lion. I would have.
I like living on the edge, Graham. It was
fun. Apparently, yeah.
It was good. Now, there was too many.
If I was you, I would still be tempted, while the machine's new, while you haven't got that much invested in it, I would still go and download the full installer for Lion and do a clean install, blow it away while it's still new.
Mm.
And in fact, having used it for a few days is even better, because now you know all the mistakes that you make in the first few days and you won't make them a second time. Well, some of them anyway.
One would hope. One would hope. My second experience with Apple on the weekend.
Yeah.
For the past, what month are we into now? August? Probably since about January. February, maybe? My wife decided she was going to drop her iPhone and smash the glass.
This happened quite a while ago. We've been talking about
but
this.
But not just smashed.
No, there were bits of it missing.
Yeah.
Oh.
There were shards of glass removed from the front.
Oh, now please tell me you took it to the Apple shop when you took your MacBook there.
I took it to the Apple shop when I took my MacBook there, Graham.
Well done, Andrew.
And they said, oh, that's good, isn't it? Anyway, the long and short of it was they replaced it, which is what they do. Anything that's broken, they don't actually fix it or pull it apart or do yeah. anything like that. They swap it out for a newie.
Yeah.
Costs you $220.
Well, possibly a refurb one someone else has brought it back smashed and they fixed.
I quizzed that and they said, no, we don't do refurbs.
These are really?
All, these are all, like, you, if you get your iPhone, it comes in a nice white box, you know, the Apple way.
Yeah.
And these come in little black boxes and they swap out yours for theirs
yeah.
and send it off. But the girl assured me
it was brand new.
It was, they don't do refurb ones. They're all.
So that would be quite understandable if they did that.
And so what did they ping you for that?
$220.
Okay.
$220, which when you think about it, for a device which is probably, you know, $700 to $1,000 to buy.
To buy outright, yeah.
Is not all bad.
Yeah.
Not all bad.
Well, that's good.
So
what did they say when they saw your wife's screen?
Ouch.
Yeah.
What happened to this? But my wife then quizzed the attendant at the Apple store and saying, you must get a lot of these come in with people with dodgy phones. And she said, oh, yeah, this is nothing compared to some of the ones that have come in here.
Oh, dear.
She was saying the worst one she had ever seen was the kids in the back seat of the car were playing with the new iPhone.
Yep.
And it flung it out the window.
Yep. And got run over by a truck.
And then she picked up the pieces and brought it into the shop.
What happened to the kids? Were they thrown out the window after the iPhone?
No.
No.
Kids aren't that bad. So,
are you sure?
Yeah. The long and short of it was it cost her $220 and she got a new phone.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
So well done, Apple.
I wonder what the process is in the... See, I was assuming that Apple would take your phone back, they'd refurbish it, they'd probably replace... You know, just keep some of the expensive electronics and replace all the case and give it back to somebody who will never know the difference after complete testing. But obviously, you're saying they don't do that. I wonder if they send it back to someone, to some... testing center or something to use as research to say, well, we've got X thousand where this has happened to the screen and we've got X thousand where the case is bent here, so the next model we should make that stronger there and stuff like that.
Some of our listeners might know that. They might be in the know.
Hmm.
They may not be.
It would be the sort of thing that Apple might just do, you know?
Well, we'd have to check it out and see what happens. Maybe next time I'm up there I'll ask.
Hmm.
Whereas any other manufacturer would just say, yep, we're going to send your phone off to be repaired.
Yeah, well, and it wouldn't even be done by them. It would be done by a local contractor who just picked up the lowest bid.
We'll have it back to you in probably 2 weeks. Yep, 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks. Yeah. We'll give you a call when it's in.
Have this brick in the meanwhile, if you're lucky.
If you're lucky.
If you're lucky, yeah.
So that was my tech experience during the course of the week. Sorry to take up everyone's time, but it never rains, but it pours.
You've had a busy tech week while I've been lying in bed.
Yeah, I think I've come out of it relatively unscathed.
Good.
I've just sort of had a
stronger for the experiences.
Oh, well, you know, you're in a game where you've got to move media around and there's no internet and they've got clients saying, where is it? And going, just talk amongst yourselves for a moment.
You do it the old-fashioned way, do you? Put on the tape and chuck it in the back of a motorcycle and career it somewhere.
Haven't had Evel Knievel in for some time, actually. They're normally Australia Post guys, these guys.
So you didn't get to that stage, obviously. You've managed to survive.
Yeah, mobile broadband's a wonderful thing.
Oh. You're just frightening me with the sort of things that you're likely to need to upload using your mobile broadband.
Oh, yeah, I can do 600 meg in half an hour on Telstra. Easy.
Yeah, but 600 meg wouldn't cover your typical output.
No. These are just they're MP4 files that go up onto Vimeo and places like that.
Oh,
so
okay.
70 to 100 meg types of uploads. That's not so bad. But, yeah, when you do a couple of them. And everything else tries to work in the background, that's probably about it. So, anyone else have anything exciting to share, technically speaking, from the course of the week?
I don't think so.
Good. Dr. Ron's just oblivious to everything. You did well to getting the news together, I must admit. Must have been, what's gone on in the last 5 days when you surfaced just and came up for air?
Scraped it in there, didn't we? Slow news week and slow correspondence week, but we'll get into what we've got.
Oh, well, Andrew, Let's do it, shall we?
Your say on Tech Talk Radio.
It's probably all the Olympics.
You think that's what it is? People are distracted. They're watching other things.
Yeah, very much so. And also the fact that the broadband was really slow this week, not just from my point of view, but I think generically.
I watched some streamer twirling for about a minute.
Did you?
Yeah, that's been my involvement with the Olympics this year.
One of the biggest things, I was listening to ABC local radio here in Melbourne the other day.
Mm-hmm.
4 talkback callers rang up about geo-blocking and unblocking us and how they're watching their Olympics.
Look, so it's a big deal. It means a lot to a lot of people.
Absolutely. So if you think about people of typical listeners like that ringing up and saying, oh, this is how we do it, that's impressive. Sorry, Coro time.
50% of the correspondence concerns exactly that,
Andrew. Oh, geo-blocking?
Yes. So first, on this week's correspondence, Tristan, via the contact form, says, hey, guys, I also received my Raspberry Pi on Monday too. Graham, you told us last week
that you received your
Raspberry Pi, your little tiny little computer in a matchbox. How's it going?
Leans was going to make it into hers into a Space Invader coffee table, and Graham hadn't. You were
going to make a media center, perhaps.
Yeah, well, I've investigated this. Read the Coro first because I think it's relevant.
Okay, guys, I received my Raspberry Pi. I haven't got too many plans for it yet, but I am going to buy several SD cards for it and load different operating systems and applications for different situations.
Yep, I've got 4 SD cards.
Wow,
for that reason.
with different operating systems?
I've only got 2 on them at the moment, but...
What are they?
They're both Media Center distros.
Ooh.
Different ones.
So, I feel like doing something different. I can just switch the cards... Oh, beg your pardon. So, if I feel like doing something different, I can just switch the cards out for whatever I want to do with it. I've only set up Debian Wheezy on it so far and had a very brief play around on it by hooking it up to the TV. Debian's a Linux distribution. I'm very pleased and impressed with it so far. I thought it would be a lot slower, but it actually works very well. I've never used Linux before, but it looks and feels simple enough. I have seen somewhere that someone has put Ice Cream Sandwich on theirs, so I may also have a look at doing that.
Yep.
I can only work on it as much as the wife and family allows, but I'm hoping to have several projects completed by the end of the year, including a media server and also a remote to control other devices. I may have to get more Raspberry Pis if all proves to be successful. I was very surprised at how quick it was shipped to me. It was only a week from the order. I'd love to hear what you guys do with yours when you've played around with them for a bit. Cheers, Tristan.
Yep. Well, we'll certainly let you know. I haven't taken the approach. I haven't put on the recommended Linux distro as Tristan has. It's one of the things I plan to do when I get a bit more time to play with it.
That's the Debian version?
There's a couple of different versions. There's and I'm not up to date with exactly what they are because I haven't played with them yet. But yeah, there's some. I think most of them are Debian based. There's one called Squeeze, which actually was recommended by Raspberry Pi, but I think somebody compiled a much better optimized one that ran about 30% faster on the Pi. So
fantastic!
I think they're actually recommending a community contributed one instead of their own one these days.
Well, that's good. They do what they do best, and leave the developers to do what they do best.
Yeah, there's a massive community coming up with lots and lots of good stuff on the Pi at the moment. But yeah,
it hadn't occurred to me that you could also run like a flavor of Android on it, but obviously Ice Cream Sandwich is Android operating system for mobile devices.
Yeah, yep.
Isn't that fantastic? And you've got HDMI for your video output and your audio output?
Or you've got analog audio output on a 3.5mm socket and composite video on a RCA socket as well as option. So you've got two options for video and audio out.
How much are they, Graham?
$35.
Yeah. Posted if they
for the B version, which is the one we're playing with, which has the Ethernet port on it.
Cheap as chips.
And yeah, no, I think you pay for postage and you end up and it doesn't come with anything. It's just a bare circuit board, so you've got to buy a few accessories to go with it. You've got to buy an SD card to plug into it that acts as its hard disk. Its operating system loads on that. You've got to get a little power supply, which is just any micro USB power supply that can supply an amp or so.
You'll need a keyboard and you'll need a pointing device if the operating system requires it.
Depending on what you're going to do with it, you might need a keyboard and a mouse, or you might be able to remote control it. You might be able to SSH into it through the Ethernet port.
That's true, yeah.
So, yeah, there's various different ways. So the accessories you buy to go with it are going to depend on what your application is.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Thanks for the feedback, Tristan. If people are interested, have a look at the website, www.raspberrypi.org. Pi is P-I.
As in 3.14...
As in 22 over 7.
We'll be no doubt talking about applications of this device for a little while, on and off, as we play with our ones that we've got.
Absolutely.
Warlock's just put it in the chat. Hello, Warlock.
If you're listening to us live, come and join us in the chat. I'm not going to tell you where it is, because you should know by now. Oz Governor, via the Tech Talk contact form,
chat.techtalkradio.
Oz says, okay, I'm calling it. By the 2016 Olympics, free-to-air TV rights will be mostly irrelevant to events like this.
Couldn't agree more.
Where multi-channel is so desperately wanted and needed, internet rights will be much more important. Furthermore, I suspect it may become harder to dodge geo-blocking using services like Unblock Us. Thanks for that, by the way, says Oz.
That's right, Oz. Got to work out at our place, let me tell you.
If internet rights go up in value, so too the budget to write technology to defend against it. I got frustrated with Channel 9's coverage. I don't think you weren't the lone ranger there, Oz. An impossible task, I'll admit. For a multicultural country, most folk who are expats of other countries would have been left out in the cold, as my Brazilian wife would have been in the Brazil-Mexico football final, had it not been for Unblock Us. She's glad she married an IT geek.
Cheers, Brazil Oz next Gupper. Year. Next Olympics, 2016.
Well, they're the next ones.
Yeah. Oz, are you going to go back to Brazil to watch the games 4 years from now? 1,400 days away.
Is it?
Yeah. Oh. Well, they're counting already, haven't you seen? You've been crook, I know.
I've not had Channel 9 turned on a television for some months. So.
Haven't you? No. Good boy.
Unblock Us. There you go. And there are others as well, which we'll talk about later,
there
too.
There is.
But lots of ways to look at the coverage if the local version is not to your liking.
Oh, yes. And I think that was pretty much the case for a lot of people.
Make the technology work for you. That's all the correspondence this week, Andrew. It's Olympic week. If you'd like to communicate with us, you know how. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au.
It's on a need-to-know basis here. We're going to take a break, come back. We're going to talk about hacking, and we're going to talk about the journo in the United States that had his life wiped.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I talked about it on ABC Radio today, too.
In a good way or a bad way?
Oh, in a bad way. In a bad way. But anyway, more about that after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Oh, what does this button do? Hello, everybody.
But I buck the trend on the hive mind that is Tech Talk Radio.
Which is patently absurd.
It is absurd, exactly right.
But anyway, my point is...
Moving along.
My point is...
And why do you have to change the phone number?
That's a good question, Dr. Ron. Why?
If they're that clueless, they should not be answering the phone.
I can't see a blue tin. I can't see a blue tin.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just in case you missed something, want to hear a discussion again, or even if you wanted to indulge in the Tech Talk Radio extended mix, then subscribe to the Tech Talk Radio podcast. You'll find a link on the website, techtalkradio.com.au, or subscribe on iTunes. You can also have a repeat of the current show streamed live to your device by visiting stitcher.com or by visiting the Tech Talk Radio small screen site, m.techtalkradio.com.au. Tech Talk Radio, it's everywhere you need it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You're indeed welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron's in this evening. Graham's in.
Hello,
I'm Andrew. Lena is
not in.
Sends her apologies. She's unwell, but she'll be back next week.
Yeah, a lot of it going around.
We miss you, Lena.
Nah, she just wants to watch Big Brother.
Oh, no.
Oh, dear. Anyway.
Big Brother. No, it's not the answer.
No, it's not.
Never has been and never will be.
Hey, Google copped a big fine during the course of the week.
Yeah.
$22.5 million, which equates to about $21.5 million Australian dollars at the moment, for leaving or for using cookies to track to trace the browsing habits of Safari users. For marketing purposes.
That's you.
I got sprung.
We're all looking at you. You're a Safari user.
I am. I use them all. Except for, I think Firefox is giving me too much grief and IE down the track. But anyway, that's another story. Google's going to pay its 21 or 22 million US dollars to settle charges. It bypassed user privacy settings in the Safari browser. And the deal ends an FTC probe into allegations that the search giant used cookies. Also on iPhones and iPads and all those sort of things. So not
it's
just
the
on
same
Macs.
Thing.
Right across all their gadgets.
Yeah, there's a security to stop you using cookies on one site and reading them back on another site to track users from one site to the next. The security is supposed to stop you from being able to do that, and Google found a way around it in Safari and exploited it.
In fact, there's been a lot about cookies, especially in Europe. Recently, I think, where a lot of sites, if you go to the BBC site, for example, they tell you about their cookie policy and stuff like that, and you have to accept that to continue.
Google said it was accidental, this one. They said, whoops, yeah, sorry, it was there for a different reason altogether, but that was a side effect. We're really sorry.
Yeah.
Didn't mean for it to work that way. They said they were testing Google Plus functionality.
Yeah, the old thing, what was the old Buzz, the old social network? It was legacy. They were doing something with it in Buzz or something like that. So,
and that was left behind, that code.
Yeah, words to that effect. So, cookies, yeah. Cookie. How would you describe a cookie, Graham, for those that, what the hell are you talking about? Something you get from the local supermarket?
A cookie is a little bit of information, and I do mean a little bit, that a website can save on your computer and ask for it back later, and it uses that to identify you.
So it saves it in the form of a very small file.
So if you've been there and you've said, hi, I'm Graham, when you come back next time, it says, welcome back, Graham, doesn't it?
Yeah, but even within the same session, you see, the thing with internet connections is that when you're browsing a website, you're not connected to that. Like if you click through several pages on a website to look at different things, say on a shopping site or on a news site, or look through several articles or whatever it might happen to be, you don't have a solid connection to that website for the entire time that you're reading it. Every click is a new connection and a new session in technical terms. So quite often the website will want to remember where you were last and where you might want to go to next, or it might want to remember just what your name is so it can put your name at the top of the page or stuff like that, just even from one click to the next within the same session. And it can use cookies to do that. It can also, and of course this is critical to things like shopping sites where you have a shopping cart that you're putting your items in and clicking around and doing some more shopping and putting some more items in it. It's got to know that it's you coming back, and that's what cookies are generally used for.
Mm.
The safeguard is that generally you're not allowed. So if I go to andrewmccollum.com,
have you been there? There's a blog there,
and you set a cookie on my machine to remember that I was Graham, or that I looked at this page last, or whatever it might happen to be.
Yep.
And then later on, I go to drron.com.
.au.
Then drron.com.au can't ask for the cookie that andrewmccollum.com.au set.
No, do you know what I mean?
Doesn't matter. Dr. Ron can't ask for the cookie that Andrew set.
That's right.
And Andrew can't ask for the cookies that Dr. Ron set. So it effectively shouldn't be able to track your information.
Technically can or shouldn't?
Shouldn't be able to.
Okay.
There's various ways around this, and Google found a really good one in Safari.
Yeah, okay, yep.
The other way around it is to embed stuff on the page. So, for example, if I go to Andrew McCollum's webpage and he shows me an ad for, Pink Widgets, and then I go to your page and I see the same ad from Pink Widgets that's served from the same advertising server that's separate from both of you, then that advertising server can set a cookie and it can know that I've looked at its ad from both of your websites because it's the same server. And that's another way that they work around it.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons that advertising is always outsourced. It's always, sent to you from the advertiser's server, not from the site that you're looking at.
Yeah, well, Google in this instance said, we did the wrong thing. No question about that. And they've agreed to pay, as Andrew said.
Cookies in general, although you see a lot of stuff about them being evil and about being used to track you and all this sort of stuff, and people are very frightened about cookies. Although they can be used for tracking you, they're also essential for actually making the web useful. So, got to bear in mind that they're a good thing. They're not inherently an evil thing.
Yep, we'll have cookies enabled in our browsers. It's not
chocolate chip ones,
not something
please.
That you generally worry about security wise.
Correct. All right. excuse me. Moving on. How many times have you been into a shop and especially looking for tech gadgets and bits and pieces like that, and it says HD ready or digital TV ready?
Oh, thankfully Wi-Fi not for a long time. We got over this sort of this nonsense. I thought we'd moved on from this nonsense.
Think we've moved on from this nonsense?
Everything's HD. Any TV you buy anywhere in the world now would be HD enabled. Surely, tell me that has to be the case.
Let's talk about Wi-Fi ready then, shall we?
Wi-Fi ready? Oh no, Wi-Fi and televisions shouldn't.
Well. The ACCC
it's
are
two
citing
words that shouldn't go together. If you're going to have internet connectivity to a television, just make it wired, for goodness sake. Just avoid the whole Wi-Fi.
Not always practical for everybody.
It's not, but exactly. do the best you possibly can to have it wired.
You've been into a lot of inner city housing recently in your quest for things.
Yes, I have.
You would notice that there's a lot of brick walls and there's no sort of places to run conduit under floors that easily and readily, isn't there?
Yeah, I guess.
So in today's modern yuppie stylized living where you want to put a TV all by its little lonesome and all you've got is a PowerPoint, the last thing some people want to do is run cables.
Yeah, I guess so.
On the other hand, the electrician found a way to get the power there.
Yes. Anyway, the ACCC have sided on your side, Dr. Ron, and they've gone, oh no, not again.
Oh no, not again.
With Sony, LG, Panasonic, Samsung and Sharp under pressure from the competition regulator to stop making TVs and Blu-ray players that cannot connect to Wi-Fi networks as Wi-Fi ready. Because
Wi-Fi ready, in that case, what the manufacturers were using that to mean is that you can plug an extra device in that you have to go and buy separately to connect to Wi-Fi.
Yeah, not a device that you may already have in your kit.
No, it's not ready because it doesn't have. It's ready to be plugged in if you pay extra and buy the extra device.
It's like buying a new car without tyres, and the manufacturer says, it's roadworthy ready.
Yeah.
That's just exactly stupid. Right. It's just pointless.
That's a great analogy. Roadworthy ready.
Manufacturers, come on, don't do this.
Oh, dear. Anyway, it's obviously a ploy for manufacturers to keep the cost of the base unit down, and once you've bought that particular brand, they'll go, right, you want accessories?
And they're just trying to get an edge over other manufacturers.
You dry.
They're just trying to put fancy big stickers on things that say, look, this is Wi-Fi, and then small word, ready.
Well, the ACCC took offence and took a dongle, actually, and got narky about the fact that Wi-Fi, the actual, you could plug a Wi-Fi device into these tellies, but it wouldn't work. You had to plug in the manufacturer's Wi-Fi device.
Mm.
And, of course, as you would expect, you're going to pay $100, $120
for
one of these
for
devices.
Something that's worth $30. Yep.
Yeah, so a lot of consumers were misled by the fact, oh, yeah, I've got a Wi-Fi thing and yada, yada, yada.
And you get it home and you look for setting how to set it up onto Wi-Fi and it says, oh, you've got to buy this extra device.
You need a same brand Wi-Fi adapter and that's going to cost you $120. And you go, what? Anyway, Wi-Fi ready, snuffed out by the ACCC. Thank you very much. One less thing for you to worry about, Dr. Ron.
That's the ACCC doing a good thing there. Mountain Wombat in the chat says, I am playing with PowerPoint Ethernet to connect to the TV.
Oh, that's fraught with dangers, isn't it? I wonder how it's working.
Well, yeah, my response to that is, Mountain Wombat, if you're doing that, you are contributing to the general downfall of society and... It's the worst thing about it is it'll probably work, but it's just inherently just the wrong way to do it.
Yeah, there's just something wrong with it.
It's one of those technologies that just shouldn't exist.
Ethernet over power lines, you shouldn't go there.
No, you're creating RF interference for everybody else in the entire universe, and it's just wrong.
Last week, Matt Honan.
I'll kick him from the chair.
No, don't do that.
Sorry, Mountain Wombat. No, don't kick him. He knows not what he does.
He's turned to the dark side already. Last week, Matt Honan, who is a journo in the United States, worked for Gears and those sort of people, he had his life wiped off his Apple MacBooks. Now, there are two things here. Firstly, a hacker got in and destroyed all of the material. But the second thing is, this was no ordinary hack. This wasn't because of bad passwords or bad, use of technology. It's just that this guy... The hacker was thorough enough to go through and work out a really good plan of attack to get Matt's details. Now, subject of Adam Turner's view from the couch this evening, so we'll let Adam tell you all about it, and then we'll come back and have a bit of a chat, because it scares people, doesn't it, Graham? People go, oh, no, here we go.
Well, we're talking about identity theft, aren't we?
Yeah, we are, but the cloud's not safe, and poor Matt got hacked, and it was identity theft that actually got him hacked.
Well, let's hear the story and hear what went wrong. And we'll talk about it after.
Right. Here's Adam's view from the couch for this week.
Adam Turner's view from the couch.
A recent social engineering attack proves that it doesn't matter how strong your passwords are if people can bluff their way in. By now, most of us have heard the story of US tech journalist Matt Honan, whose digital world was recently wiped out by a hacker. The hacker remotely wiped his iPhone, his iPad, and his MacBook Air, as well as their backups in iCloud. Then he deleted his Gmail account and took control of his Twitter account. What's most incredible is that Honan wasn't hacked due to weak passwords or security flaws. Instead, the perpetrator used an elaborate social engineering scheme. It involved gleaning details from Honan's personal website, his web host, his Gmail account, his Amazon account, and using this information to trick Apple's tech support people into granting him access to Honan's iCloud account. From there, the hacker had full access to Honan's Apple gadgets and his iCloud backups, as well as the Gmail and Twitter accounts linked to the iCloud account. Honan's first mistake really was only backing up all the files on his MacBook Air to iCloud and not also to a second location. As a result, he lost a year's worth of files, including his daughter's baby photos. That really is the worst case scenario for data loss. It's perhaps the biggest lesson here. It's vitally important to make multiple backups, particularly of irreplaceable files such as family photos. Had Honan backed up these photos to a disk, to a USB drive, or to a network-attached storage drive, then he'd still have them today. Even backing up files to a separate cloud storage service probably would have kept Honan's photos safe. When you think about it, really his biggest mistake was to put all of his eggs in the one digital basket. Trusting absolutely everything to one vendor is a significant risk, regardless of who that vendor is. Apple and Google's tight ecosystems are appealing, but Honan would have been safer if he'd used a mix of services for his email, calendar, backup and sync needs. A best-of-breed approach makes life a little more complicated, but it reduces the impact of vendor lock-in and offers extra layers of protection against outages and hacking attacks. When you study closely the social engineering attack that got the hacker into Honan's iCloud account, it's the digital equivalent of the long con. Every scrap of information the hacker collected opened up one more doorway. He's biggest vulnerability really was the fact that he'd used publicly available email addresses for his Amazon and iCloud account logins. The hacker wouldn't have got far without knowing those email addresses. Honan would have been much safer if he'd created email aliases such as apple@honan.com and amazon@honan.com and only used those accounts for logging into those services, although preferably obviously an email address that's not so easy to guess. Some email services, including iCloud, make it easy to create multiple aliases and have the messages delivered straight into your main inbox, so you don't need to check multiple accounts. Honan used these publicly available email addresses to log into his accounts and used those same addresses as the backup email addresses for his other accounts in case of a password reset. This is what left him vulnerable. Another precaution Honan could have taken was adding two-factor authentication to his Google account. The concept of two-factor authentication makes it harder for hackers to breach your defenses by requiring them to present two forms of identification. Two-factor authentication tends to involve something you know, such as a password, and something you have. The something you have might be your fingerprint, a USB stick, or a keyring token displaying an ever-changing code, but the something you have can also be a code sent to your mobile phone. Along with Google, you can set up two-factor authentication for a range of other online services, including Facebook, that send codes to your phone when you want to log in. Two-factor authentication sounds like a hassle, but you don't need to do it every day. Once your computer is authenticated for Facebook or Google, you can mark it as a trusted device, so you're not constantly hassled to enter a second code on your own computer every time you log in. But if you sit down at a different computer, you'll need to enter both your password and the code sent to your phone. While you're reviewing your security, it's also worth asking yourself if you need to associate all your accounts. For example, it's possible to associate your Google account with your Twitter account, Yahoo, Facebook, and Hotmail. It's also possible to log into a wide range of services with your Facebook details rather than creating a separate login and password. It's really not that much of a hassle to create an extra login and password for these accounts. Certainly not as much of a hassle as trying to reclaim your digital life after you've been hacked. Honan's horror story should prompt all of us to do a quick security audit of our digital lives. Play devil's advocate and think about the easiest way you could be hacked. Do you have weak passwords? Do you reuse your passwords? Which services do you use that offer two-factor authentication? Would it be easier to discover the answers to your fallback security questions? Are all your eggs in the one digital basket? Do you lock your smartphone, your tablet, and your computer with a password? Have you linked all your online accounts unnecessarily? Have you left a paper trail for hackers to follow if they want to bluff their way past security measures? These are all the questions you should sit down and ask yourself before it's too late.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Losing the kiddie photos is not nice. Not a nice feeling at all happened to me recently, but I had my stuff backed up in the cloud. But I don't have... Like with the Mac ecosystem and iCloud, if you get in there, you can do a lot of damage on a lot of devices all at one time. I guess you can too if you get into other places, but maybe not so. Graham?
I think, yeah, it's an interesting story, and it is a good warning. And as Adam says, one of the morals of the story is not to have everything chained together, not to have everything reliant on the same email account or the same authentication, so you don't... use your Google login to log into everything, or use your Facebook login to log into everything in your life, or your Apple login. But I think Adam has missed out on a couple of important points in this chain of events that led to this this person being vulnerable, and that is the direct ways in which both Apple and Amazon contributed to making this so easy for the hackers. Okay, and this is the important part of the story. Have you ever noticed on a website, shopping websites in particular, like Amazon, that they'll often quite happily show you the last four digits of your credit card number?
Yep.
To remind you of which card you've used or to confirm that you're the same person or whatever it might happen
to
be.
But XXXXXX and then
1234.
That's
and
right.
It's not just the shopping sites. It's nearly every site where you have an account, whether it's
right.
Domain registrar.
They'll happily give you
Apple,
that information.
Whether it be Google, the store, everything.
Now, part of the way that this hacker got control over this guy's Apple account was that the billing address and the last four digits of the credit card number were the only two pieces of information that Apple support needed to change his password. Okay.
And now that's the information which is now the displayed in plain view.
I'll read directly this guy. This is Mr. Honan's words exactly on his blog. Apple Tech Support confirmed to me twice over the weekend that all you need to access someone's Apple ID is the associated email address, a credit card number, the billing address, and the last four digits of a credit card on file. So you need, and that way you can get into the account, add your own, even fake credit card details to the account, and so on. But having the last four digits of the existing user's credit card details was one of the key things, and the other ones were trivial, like his email address and his billing address.
Yep.
Which, if you've got the white pages and you've got his blog, which has got his email address at the bottom,
then you've got that information.
You've got that information is always generally public.
Yeah, see, a lot of websites these days, or a lot of services like Facebook, lets you use your username as your email address.
Oh, an awful lot of sites and services do that.
There's one part. So, but it's, don't know what that is.
It's an interesting disconnect, and it's a critical disconnect that the information that Amazon considers so insignificant that they will display it in the clear on a web page. The last four digits of the credit card number is the key piece of identifying information, authenticating information that Apple require.
And that's information that you can see over somebody's shoulder. It's shown in plain text on the screen.
And he makes an interesting point. It's the same information you give to your local pizza shop every week when you order pizza on a Saturday night.
Hmm.
Well, it's your credit card number and your home address. And your email address, quite often, if you order from one of the chains that has the email address. And you're giving that to a 17-year-old on minimum wage. So, and the other part of the hack was Amazon's... So that was Apple being slack, requiring a very easily obtainable piece of information to be the identifying piece of information. The Amazon had similar holes in their... In their security systems. So this guy rang Amazon on the phone and said he was the account holder and he wanted to add a new credit card to his account.
Well, it's a different email, wasn't it? Because then they forwarded him an email to reset his password, wasn't it?
That was the second half.
Ah, sorry. I'll shut up now.
Yep.
Jumping the
so, gun. Yeah, so you ring Amazon. All you need to provide is... the existing email address, the billing address, and give them a new credit card number and say, can you associate that with that account? Now, it seems harmless. Then you hang up, you ring back, get to talk to a different Amazon help desk person. You say you've lost your email address. So you give them the credit card number that you just created on the account.
So whatever account you've got there, Amazon, it's the one that's associated with this credit card number.
That's right. And this billing address and this old email address, can you add this new email address to it?
Yep.
Because I can't access my old email address anymore.
Yep.
And I'll happily do that and send a password reset to that new email address.
Mm.
And then that was the door opened then, wasn't it?
That was the door. That was the first door he opened. That gave him access to the Amazon account. And the Amazon account, by displaying his credit, the last four digits of his real credit card number, gave him the Apple ID account. And the Apple ID account gave him the rest of his universe. Now, that's not this guy's fault.
Nah.
That's... even though this guy's admitted that he's made mistakes in his security, I really believe that both Amazon and Apple, by having such slack security and left such big loopholes in their security, have contributed greatly to this problem. And that's why you need to be very careful with any website that saves your credit card information and knows it again later.
Mm.
And that's the big giveaway.
Rather than prompting you at each and every transaction to enter your credit card details.
That's right. All those sites that remember your credit, and Apple do it, and Amazon do it, and lots of, you know, PayPal do it, that's a big red flag saying, hang on, there's loopholes in the security here, and there's a possibility for a hack. The biggest threat is that someone hacks into their website and steals their database of credit card numbers, of course. But hacks, you know, social engineering hacks like this that aren't directly technology hacks. They're hacks of the security procedures and hacks of the people.
This is like what you were saying, Dr. Ron. This is more like an identity theft.
It is identity theft.
And once you've stolen the identity, you can go and masquerade around as this poor Matt and then wreak havoc in his life.
And Apple and Amazon make it too easy for someone to do that.
Well, Apple admitted liability to him, and they said that it appeared that their internal policies were not followed completely, and in reviewing all of their processes for resetting account passwords, we are reviewing all of our processes for resetting account passwords to ensure our customers' data
now,
is
protected.
Now, that's
Apple being somewhat disingenuous, I think, because the magazine editors that published this story checked several times with different help desk operators with Apple, and were able to confirm multiple times that all they required was the Apple ID, the associated email address, and a credit card number.
Mm.
Okay, so they confirmed that several times. So it's not like there was one help desk operator who chose to accept an inappropriate level of authentication.
No, this is a systemic failure in their policies.
This is a systemic failure, not a failure to follow the policy. It's bad policies.
Bad policy that they have.
Yeah.
Yeah, not good. Not good at all.
No, and it brings up the big red flags. You know, if you are a customer of one of these services that saves your credit card number,
and they don't need to save the credit card number for recurring expenses or recurring purchases.
And admittedly, there's good reasons why, say, the Apple App Store saves your credit card number. Let's say you can easily buy a $2.50 app using that credit card number from your device without having to key in your
whole... It's for convenience.
It's convenient. But if you are using a service that does that, don't daisy chain it with other services. Don't use that service, you know, to get in that same email address and that same password and that same credit card even on other sites as well. Just limit your exposure.
I've noticed over recent years that there is this more and more. There's this tendency for sites to authenticate credentials against
use your Facebook login
exactly,
or use your,
exactly against another larger organization. Yep. Like you can look like
yep,
Flickr is
right.
A classic example. You used to go to Flickr and you'd have an ID account, which is a photo sharing site. Sorry, you have an ID for your account name and you have a password. Now you go there and it says, oh, why not log in with your Facebook credentials? Why not log in with your Yahoo credentials?
Exactly,
And more of these sorts of sites are doing this, and this is the very thing that we're talking about.
This is where a threat can come from, yeah.
Yeah, if I know what your email address is, Andrew, and I guess an email address that you're using for Facebook, and I use you and Facebook as an example because I know you're not on Facebook, and I happen to guess your password, but suddenly I not only have access to Facebook, I've got access to all these other sites, I've got access to mail distribution sites that you use, I've got access to email, I've got access to all sorts of stuff, photo sharing, your entire life, stuff
to
unfold.
It doesn't even need to be that explicit. If you've used the same email address as you log in on different sites, or even as your your password reset email address on different sites, then once the hacker has compromised that email address, they can go and do a password reset on any of these other sites. They don't have to be
logged
directly
in.
Related. They don't have to be logged into each other. They can use that email address they're using for password resets to gain control, and that's how these hackers got control of Twitter.
Mm.
So, create... If you've got your own domain name, or even if you're running other email services and things like that, create a specific account like I do. I have, not going into it, but I have organization at a domain name.
Yeah.
So that I can actually log into that organization and use that, and knowing that that's the only place that email address has been given. It's also really good for working out who's giving out your email address for spam.
And where spam, right, if spam comes into a particular address, you think, well, I only ever gave that to LinkedIn, or I only ever gave that to Facebook.
Now, not everybody's going to want to have a dozen different email addresses to run a dozen different services. That's not convenient. But have a private and personal email address that's just separate from the one that you tell the public.
Yeah.
Okay, so don't use andrew@techtalkradio.com.au as your email address that you use to log into services with.
No, I don't. And I'm surprised that I get so many emails from eBay. Please reset your password. No, I don't have one.
And that's a good trick to know that those ones are not the legitimate password reset emails. But, by just having an email address that isn't your publicly known email address and use that as the one that's associated with all your services, that can make a big difference to security. Because if these hackers hadn't been able to guess this guy's two email addresses, then which were both, his given name, initial, and his surname at well-known email providers.
Yeah.
Were easy to guess and very public. If he'd had a private one that was something a little bit more obscure at even at hotmail.com, then, you know, he could have avoided the problems.
One of the other issues... Sorry, Dr. Ron, you going to say something?
Something about credit card security, just as an aside. If you live in Melbourne, and this show's broadcast on a number of stations in Melbourne in Australia, and you use the public transport and you use the MyKey ticketing system, you need to be aware that the imbeciles that designed and built and constructed the MyKey ticketing system...
This is our public transport fare system,
yeah,
isn't it?
...saw fit to actually print receipts with 9 digits of your credit card number on it.
If you're kidding.
Pay, no, if you pay by credit card, and that if you say, no, I don't want a receipt at a vending machine, the machine will print a receipt anyway with 9 digits of your credit card on it, as well as the credit card's expiry date and your full name.
Out of 12 digits. So
yeah, so this came out in the news.
Does it leave you guess the 4, 5, 6, 3 on the beginning, which flavour card it might happen to be?
So, not going to take much to guess, is it?
No.
This was in the news during the week in mainstream news. The information says the information on the receipts exceeds the guidelines that the Australian Securities and Investment Commission and credit card companies put in place to minimise the risk of unauthorised transactions.
So who takes the rap for that if someone gets
well,
done?
Well, it's the designers of the system have... Well, if somebody gets done, I don't know. It has to be tested. But the Transport Ticketing Authority says, yes, they are looking at it. It is a flawed process and they're trying to
fix
the problem.
Which 9 digits do they provide?
It does not say, Graham. It does not say.
Mm.
But any 9 digits,
end, you're in trouble.
It can't
well,
be.
Well, that's more than half.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's a huge amount, man, and would not take long to guess or to brute force a validation.
Not these days, no.
No.
Just going back with Matt Honan's issue before too, the second part of his demise was basically just trusting everything to the cloud. You need to have an extra hard drive at home, whether it be a remote storage device or another computer or something, because you don't want to just trust your photos.
Or a cloud service that was unrelated to his other services.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to trust to just one organisation when it comes to those valuable things, whether it be documents, photos, movies, whatever, because it will bite you in the bottom one day and you will live to regret it and your children will hate you. Where are my birthday photos when I was a young kid? Imagine explaining that to the grandkiddies. I don't have any photos because...
The great
Dad
crash of 2012.
Slack. Yeah. So, unfortunately, Matt had his photos in the cloud, which, you know, everyone, has, you get around to doing it, but now's the time to do it, guys. Don't do it tomorrow. Well, actually, yeah, do it tomorrow, but don't do it sort of like in a couple of weeks' time or a couple of years' time, because it could all go pear-shaped when you least expect it.
We'll possibly never hear, but I suspect that if this guy was to take his hard drives out of his devices, or even his flash memory out of his devices, to a reputable data recovery company...
Half a chance?
I reckon better than half a chance. I reckon there's a fairly good chance he'd be able to get them back, but it'll cost him a few grand to do.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're not cheap, those guys.
It could well be worth it for his...
A few grand for those...
For his kids' baby photos, 12, yeah.
Yeah, it certainly hurt. It's not going to be...
Yeah.
Because I know with drives, they can actually pull them apart and rebuild them with new things in them, can't they?
Yeah.
And that costs big bucks.
Yeah.
So...
But all right. It should be software recoverable, I would have thought, which is going to cost less, but yeah.
So we're coming away from this with don't be scared. Just apply a bit
just
more
be
common
careful.
Sense
yeah.
and be
yeah.
a bit more diligent in just what think- you give. And don't give... This is what I don't like about some of these social networks. Stop giving people personal information on the web, the stuff that they don't need, because that's where this guy fell over. You know, it's easy. You go and get your address online, but... You have to give them something.
Yeah, and another one that's worth mentioning is a lot of these security questions. What was your mother's maiden name?
Shirley.
Now, that if both you and your mother are on Facebook or LinkedIn or any of those...
Yeah.
Then it's not difficult to derive that.
It's going to be very easy to find that information.
Yeah.
You know, where did... You know, what was your... You know, primary school you went to, that could well be in your Facebook profile.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's stuff that
so true.
Don't use for those security questions information that people can find in Facebook.
Mm.
And for that matter, don't use any biographical information like that as seeds for your passwords. So don't use the name of the street you grew up in as the root word in your password.
Do you reckon,
that you've modified to make your password out of?
Do you reckon we're going
to
see...
Even if you have changed the E's to 3's and you think you're being really clever, you're not.
I know. You see them drive down the street each day on the registration plates of cars. Do you think we're going to head more towards a two-factor authentication for a lot of these services? Like the banks are doing it now in the form of something you have on your person, whether it be the little doodicky.
Yeah, or they send you a text message with a one-off key.
Yeah, exactly like that. So it's sort of going to eliminate these sort of options where...
If this sort of happened, like for a large organization like Apple or those guys,
it'll make it more difficult, but it has to be a usable system at the end of the day.
Yeah, but everyone's
you can't be spending 15 minutes, you know, logging onto a website, you know, waiting for text messages and setting stuff back and mucking around like that.
Yeah, but it can all be pretty quick these days. You try banking.
It can be,
but
it's not always. Yeah, and true. That's one of the problems with SMS. If you want to get into your email, your business email, and your laptop's just been stolen, and you've borrowed a laptop to get into your email, you can't be sitting there for half an hour waiting for an SMS to come through, because SMSs sometimes can just be slow.
Yep. Or you're not in a mobile coverage area or something like that. It's just this ongoing battle of...
And you can absolutely guarantee that the company that you've got that, even if it's something like a token that has a number on it, you can guarantee that there's a way around it, that you can social engineer your way around it, because people will lose them. And, you know, if you've got one with your, you know, ABC Bank, and you ring up ABC's bank help desk and you say, oh, I've lost my token, but I really need to get into my account, I bet there's a way around it to get into
the person at the bank will say, yeah, well, that's a realistic, you know.
Let's answer these questions in
your
real world
scenario. What was your mother's maiden name? Mm.
That actually happened to me recently, Graham.
There you go.
One of the questions that they asked was, what was your last transaction on your MasterCard? That was a good question, I thought.
No, I don't like that as a question.
Really?
That's a stupid question.
Well, no.
Because it could be any number of transactions on your MasterCard. The last 15, I wouldn't be able to tell you what I had, because I've got so many things that are automated.
Really? There's my token from my bank.
Yeah.
And
as Graham holds up token out of wallet.
And there's my MasterCard in the same wallet.
Yeah.
If someone takes that wallet, goes and uses that MasterCard to do a transaction, there you go.
Yeah, no, that's true. So don't keep your wallet with your MasterCard. Anyway.
Yeah, but don't you have automated payments set up to come out of your account?
Yeah.
So if I said, what was the last transaction happened in your account? It could have been your ISP automated. Yeah. It could have been an automated rates payment. Could have been automated.
Yep, all they've got to do is take your credit card account statement out of your letterbox.
No, point taken.
That's why I don't like that.
Yeah. Good idea. Yeah,
and then you look at, you say, well, that one will be a monthly. So if I ring up on the 27th and say my last transaction was your payment of your... whatever it was.
Yeah, but you really got to be keen to do that. I'm not trying to make excuses for
the
technology.
No, you don't have to be keen. All you got to do is...
If someone wanted to hack you, I'd be sitting at the front of your place. Hi, Graham, just waiting for the postie. What? So, you know.
Yeah, but that's not... I mean, that's...
People can do that.
Yeah. It can be opportunistic. I've swiped a bank statement on, you know, I just happened to be walking past just as the postie delivered and I can see the, you know, Westpac logo sticking out of the letterbox. I'll just swipe that and then
at least...
Yeah. I haven't. That's the reason I've targeted you. I haven't set out to target you. It's just that was the opportunity. I've got this bank statement. I can use that to build a profile from and hack it really easily.
It's all the postie's fault. We're going to take a break. When we come back, there's more things that happen in the world. Google did lots of things too, so we'll talk about that as well.
You're listening.
What does this button do? Hello, everybody.
But I buck the trend on the hive mind that is Tech Talk Radio.
Which is patently absurd.
It is absurd, exactly right.
But anyway, my point is...
Moving along.
My point is...
And why do you have to change the phone number?
That's a good question, Dr. Ron. Why?
If they're that clueless, they should not be answering the phone.
I can't see a blue tin. I can't see a blue tin.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
And we're back. Hello, everybody. This is Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron is here. Graham's in on today's show. Leans is feeling a bit shabby, unfortunately. So get well soon, Leans, if you're listening to us.
Yeah.
So we miss you and looking forward to a computer game update in the not-too-distant future. I'm going to do a best effort at the moment. Blizzard got hacked. Well, Blizzard.net,
their Battle.net,
got hacked.
Yeah.
Been the week for hackings, hasn't it? They had a go at ASIO, a few other sites, but Blizzard is another notable one. Accounts for the millions of players have been stolen in a hack on Blizzard's, which they made World of Warcraft. Remember that?
Sure did.
We used to play all that, didn't
and
we?
And the rest,
wee,
World of Warcraft and normal Warcraft and StarCraft, big name in video games.
So this is the Battle.net login.
Diablo, of course, D3, which we've spoken about in recent weeks.
Yeah. Players in North America should change their login details for the account management service, according to Blizzard. So far, it said there was no evidence that credit card numbers or other personal details have been taken. So, yeah, it's just everyone's opening themselves up these days. I wonder how they did that.
They got into the back-end web servers, and what they got, interestingly, was the password hashes, but also the salts that were used to create the hashes. And by having that, what that means is that by having that database, the hackers can then attack those offline with dictionaries, and people with weak passwords, dictionary-based passwords, will be quite vulnerable because they'll be able to run the whole dictionary against the database of passwords, find which ones match, and only then connect to the actual server to try and log in as that user. So the server won't see the multiple attempts. They'll be able to run all that in the hacker's own network and work out what the password was. So the way a hash works is that you run a mathematical thing on the password, and it turns it into a special code. And if the code matches what's been saved, then the original password must have matched. So that makes it so that it's harder to steal. But of course, if you steal the whole database of hashes, you can still run that offline to try and guess passwords that are too easy to guess.
We were talking about hacking in the previous segment. What about loyalty cards? They've got to be open up, because people treat those as second class. They're not like, they don't treat them like a credit card, do they? They treat them with a bit of contempt. But there's a lot of personal information that goes into those things.
Sometimes there can be, yeah, yeah.
So maybe that's something to keep an eye out for too.
I don't use them for that reason. I couldn't be less interested in what I'm offered, and just don't use them.
Well, I just take my receipts, because they printed stuff on the bottom if you want a discount. Take those.
Mm.
The main reason that places offer loyalty cards is for marketing reasons, to collect information about what you do.
What you do, what you're buying, where and when.
That's, yeah, that's 99% the reason for them.
Yeah, it is. It's almost 100%. Yes, exactly. 99%. But not only, if you have a Myer loyalty card, that doesn't just apply to Myer. It applies to every other chain that the same owners own. So that you takeaway chicken for dinner, and it's the same. It's the same owner. It's owned by the same root company at the very top
yep,
of the tree.
All the data is shared between everybody.
Yeah, that's right.
Several federal agencies in Australia are still using IE6. Now, these guys, I think, to use your terminology during the break there, Dr. Ron, serves them right. They deserve to be
hacked. Serves them right. Serves everything they get. Yeah, come on.
Microsoft's much maligned IE6 web browser. Is that thing still around? Apparently
yes.
So.
Even Microsoft maligns it now. Microsoft says, do not use this product.
Yeah.
It's not safe.
Anyway, it remains approved for use in 7 of 65 federal government agencies, which came out in a new survey the other day. And the survey by eGov.au blog found that agencies supported multiple web browsers, generally Internet Explorer and one other. Did you ever find that? I've only ever known agencies to use one web browser, but obviously they're using, use this one preferably, and then use, I guess, you look at the education system. My daughter is an IE6 person at school, and she can use anything else she likes out of school because they configure IE6 to use the school's net thing or whatever it is that they connect to.
That's so sad.
But it's not IE6. I think it's IE8. But yes, okay. It's not IE6.
Okay.
But you could sort of see that may be the reason behind it. But anyway, IE6 still is in use at several small agencies with significant public or safety responsibilities, such as the Australian Maritime Safety Authority, AusAid, and the Office of Parliamentary Counsel, just to name three. So there you go. IE6 is still out there. It'll come back and haunt you when you least expect it. Oh, by the way, Neil Armstrong, the man who walked on the moon, he underwent heart surgery this week. Did you know?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. Former astronaut Neil Armstrong, the first human to set foot on the moon, is recovering from heart bypass surgery in the United States. NASA said the former astronaut underwent surgery on Tuesday to relieve a blocked coronary artery. And anyway, apparently everyone said he's doing great. Well, his wife did in particular, so that's got to be good. Armstrong, who turned 82 on Sunday, was commander of the Apollo 11 mission to the moon in 1969.
He's doing all right, isn't he?
That was a long time ago, wasn't it?
A long time ago.
1969. Think of the computing power that we have in our little smartphones compared to what he had in his little capsule. Scary. I wouldn't have gone.
Yeah, well, someone was saying in our chat room last week the Martian, the rover that NASA launched that had that's got the processing power of like the Raspberry Pi.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, it's got two of them.
It's got two what?
Two computers on board.
Has it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Anyway.
Two Raspberry Pis.
Well, two sort of somewhat similar computers, I guess.
Anyway, he survived that, so I'm sure he'll do well after his heart bypass surgery.
Good luck, yes. Mr. Gorski.
Hang on a minute.
What? It's violence
in
the studio.
Nonsense. That's absolute urban myth. Completely is.
Snopes.org.
Hey, WikiLeaks took a WikiLeaks took a bit of a pounding during the course of the week too. They had a DDoS attack, a distributed denial of service attack on the website.
A remarkably extended one too. It's been going for what, 10 days and still counting, is it?
Is it still going, is it? The attacks coincided with WikiLeaks' release of new information.
I'll just check my bot. Hang on. The... Sorry. Sorry, Andrew.
You've got a zombie over there. Can you get him out? I'd like to have a look. Have you throwing plants at him by any chance after lean?
That's right.
Yeah. Sorry, I've lost my track. The attacks coincided with WikiLeaks releasing new information on the TapWire surveillance system discussed by Stratfor, the US-based global intelligence firm, that hacker collectively, or otherwise known as Anonymous, infiltrated last year to steal roughly 5 million emails. So, have a guess as to who's organised that. Anyway, what else should we talk about today, gents?
If you are interested, listeners, do some Googling on that one. There's some interesting reading behind that story.
I'm waiting for the film on his life. I think that's going to be really good. And they had a go at the Australian government for not helping. This is the founder of WikiLeaks. Mr. Assange?
Yeah, it'll never get made.
He's, I don't know. Well, if you look at anything Hollywood's doing at the moment, everything's a remake or a sequel. There's nothing new coming out, but that's another story.
Is he still hiding in an embassy somewhere in the middle of London?
Maybe he snuck out during the games. No one noticed.
Now, speaking of, did I hear during the week, I don't know whether you guys are across this, did I hear that they've commissioned Avengers 2?
Did not hear.
No, didn't hear.
Also to be written and directed by...
he had a near-death experience and I had no internet, so you're on your own here, Greg.
Oh, well, I hope I'm right. Lena would confirm if she was here. I know she'd be across this. I got to check this now, but I was thinking that I heard that, yeah, there was going to be a sequel to The Avengers that was going to also be written and directed by Joss Whedon.
May 2015 is the internet buzz. Googling Avengers 2.
Oh, okay. So there is truth to the rumour.
No, not necessarily.
Or there's
just speculation to the rumour.
There's truth that there is a rumour.
We've confirmed the rumour. That's good. We should talk about iPhones too. But no, that's a story for another day.
On that basis.
Yeah.
Hey, ASIO's website got hacked too. It was a big week for hacking.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was.
I wouldn't want to upset ASIO unnecessarily.
No.
If you had to upset them, you wouldn't want it to be unnecessary.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
They got people in high places.
Yeah, they are the people.
If they are the people in high places.
If they speak to your people, you're in deep, problematic areas.
Yes. What happened, Dr. Ron?
An anonymous hacking group calling themselves Anonymous claimed responsibility for the attack.
The Australian arm, apparently.
Yeah.
I didn't know we had one, but we do.
And took ASIO's public web server offline for about half an hour.
Oh, okay. Only their public web server.
Just the public, yeah.
Okay.
ASIO said that there was no risk to any customer data and wouldn't represent a risk to ASIO's business.
How much traffic would you have to the ASIO website?
Oh, I'm sure there'd be a lot of public traffic for research, people doing projects.
I guess so.
People researching them, wanting to know more for legal action, stuff like that, I guess.
Interesting. Yeah, their public website is going to be entirely separate from their own IT systems. I would imagine their public website would be just hosted on a commercial web service.
It's probably
like
Melbourne IT's,
else.
That's why it got hacked.
Saying this is what we do, here's our contact details.
Like AAPT, you're looking at me.
That last voice you heard was Andrew McColm.
Yes.
Anybody, I had nothing to do with it.
No,
anyone at Melbourne IT?
Melbourne IT. Yeah, Anonymous did get stuck into AAPT as well, you're
AAPT,
right.
AAPT,
that was the week before.
Yeah, that was the Coal Fusion hack on the Melbourne IT service.
On their web service,
And it wasn't a Melbourne IT fault, that was because it was an old build of Coal Fusion, which had 9 bugs and known exploits.
Yeah, Coal Fusion is some software that runs on old web servers in the old days.
Yeah, it goes with IE6, guys. If not, maybe even before IE6, maybe IE5. LTE, long-term evolution, is the new carrier technology that we're all using, otherwise known as 4G.
It is. It's interchangeable now, Graham.
Yeah.
Nothing you say will convince me otherwise now.
Right.
It is the same thing.
Yeah, Apple made it, so... anyway, in the United States, we're starting to see voice over data, over the LTE things. Now, this is happening in the US and in South Korea as well, because,
for example, you're running Skype on a 4G or LTE handset.
Yeah, or you have a little app on your device, which instead of using the telephone network to make a telephone call, you're using the data portion of your plan to actually do your own encoding and send it across as internet traffic.
Yep.
So, anyway, when grilled, the Australian companies were sort of said, ah, that's our cash cow. We're not going to allow people to do that for years. Two, to be precise. So, and even then, though.
Who said this?
This is the Australian response from their carriers. Similar moves in Australia. Carriers are up to 2 years away before they allow, basically, the data over.
So, this is presumably the likes of Telstra and Optus have said this.
Yeah, a collective noun, a collective of telcos.
And this is why nobody used, like, just to pick on Skype, this is why nobody used Skype on their mobile phone handsets for years and years and years, because the application that Skype released was appallingly crippled, and that was because the networks would not allow them to do it.
If you have a look at what Apple are doing these days, they're actually allowing more and more device or more and more apps to communicate voice over their networks, so they're not locking it down as much as they used to. So maybe this is a sign of things to come out of the United States, and because it's all built into hardware,
Apple had
operating systems, it might permeate its way over here sooner than later.
Well, Apple had it crippled for a long time as well, and that was because of deals with networks over there.
They were buddy buddies with AT&T, but I think there's no love lost in that relationship
What's
anymore.
What's the FaceTime application like that would work on Wi-Fi only for a long time? It wouldn't work on the mobile phone networks.
It works across the mobile network
now. It does,
especially with the new iOS 6, which is September sometime.
Yep, good.
Yeah, so anyway.
Well, hopefully they pull their heads out of their backsides and just, you know, make that work. Because it's stupid. All they're doing is trying to protect commercial interests there. They're trying to, you know, stop technology from working how it's supposed to work. It's because they want people to make phone calls.
One of these days.
It's their cash cow.
One of these days the regulator will take an interest and say that data is data and you can go and deal with it.
That's what needs to happen.
Yep.
Everything should go that way. Just data. We don't need voice anymore. Just convert your voice to data and send it that
way. Well, the problem is the networks are structured differently.
They are, aren't they?
Yeah. It's not a data. It's not just one autonomous data network. There are different parts of the network.
It's not always a good thing to have everything being packet switched. There are advantages to having circuit switched voice calls.
Mm.
A circuit switched voice call is a very different beast to a packet switched. Voices, data.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, very, very different.
And, I suppose that's something we probably should talk about another week in the interest of educating people, because, you know, there are certainly times where you would want people to make an intelligent decision about which to use.
Whilst we're talking about mobile communications, Telstra is really boosting their investment into the National Broadband Network's or the LTE section of the National Broadband Network, where they're upgrading between 1,000 and 1,500 mobile base stations over the next 12 months at a cost of around about $1.2 billion. So that's certainly a bit of investment. But then you've got to look at Telstra. That's their revenue stream these days, is mobile and broadband. The old phone system in the house, the old copper pair, is sort of not long for us these days. But David Thodey was out talking to all the investors and the and all those gurus that go to those sort of meetings the other day, and selling the virtues of the fact that the company is certainly out to bolster its backbone, get all the data working properly. And we'll probably see the 4G stuff or the LTE stuff actually work a little bit beyond the city centres these days.
Well, that's going to be the cash cow. They have to invest money in that, and that's what's going to give them their best ROI. There's just no money in the Twister pair anymore.
Do you think those who have the biggest network will be the best in carriers in respect to offering or will it be more along the lines of maybe smaller networks will offer a better service to their customers?
Well, it depends how they structure it. Smaller networks could do deals with other smaller networks to build, in effect, a big shared network or something like that.
Yeah, we've only ever had three networks in Australia, really, haven't we? We've had Voda, Telstra and Optus, and everyone else, all those other carriers have bought into that and resold stuff. And Telstra, up until recently, have never allowed carriers to resell their mobile network products.
Yes, they have. They did a shared...
They did a share with three, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, but Hutchison. I think that was one of the big three. They're all club. That's the boys' club. You know what I mean?
That's fallen. Yes, that's now fallen apart and been turned off now.
But you know how Amasim and all those sort of things popped up?
They're all resellers.
AAPT or one of those sorts of mobs.
Yeah, the oversold Optus network. They'll sell anything to anyone, those guys, I believe. But anyway, that's my opinion too. Stop looking at me like that.
No, there's not much else to say because you're right. Yeah. Probably, yeah. Why it to my way of thinking, if I had a Telstra share, I'd sell it now and I'd buy shares in their mobile division when it's a separate structure.
Mm. Well, you reckon? They're going to split it all off, you reckon?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. You heard it here first.
TikTok Radio is not a registered financial advisor.
And
it's
no.
Not a financial
advisor. Thanks.
I said if I had one share. I didn't say what anyone else should do. I just said what I might do if I had a share, which I don't.
Channel 9 are going to be, up on the market fairly
wouldn't
shortly.
Wouldn't buy their shares.
No. No, but there'll be a fire sale coming up February. You watch. And who do you think will buy it? Yes.
But they've just spent so much money moving. Just moved the studios from Bendigo Street to Docklands. And
I drove past the studios.
They bought all new equipment. We know they bought lots of new equipment because there was a truckload of equipment that they had up on Grays Online for a long time.
There was.
Heaps of stuff.
There was. But
and now you think that they're going to be bought out.
You can have all the gear you like.
Yeah, but again, it won't disappear. It'll just evolve into something different.
Local content, come on. Google to demote sites with copyright removal notices. Under pressure, maybe, from the big movie houses, Google has come out and said in its blog that websites which had material on it, which they didn't perceive to be theirs, would be lowered in the search results rankings, which I think is quite interesting because...
Can you explain that? I'm not following that at all. I'm sorry, I might be a bit slow this
Dr.
week.
Dr. Ron, say, for example, you pop a clip up on a website that you've... say you were in a current affair program, hypothetically speaking.
Yep.
Now you go, this is really good, I'm going to put it on my site.
Ah.
You don't own the rights to that.
No, I don't. I've recorded it off air and it belongs to a TV network.
Yeah. So in effect, unless they've given you written permission to use it, you're in breach of copyright.
Okay. Yep.
Now what Google is saying that if you do that, they're going to push you down in the rankings because potentially you're infringing copyright. And I use the word potentially there because they're saying this isn't like a trial or jury or anything like that. Just at face value, it looks like you're doing the wrong thing, so we're going to push you down the rankings.
So they're going to be copyright police.
Yeah, to a degree. So Google came out during the course of the week and said that they had received more than 4.3 million removal requests in July this year.
4.3 million in a month.
In a month.
Okay.
Of people. And obviously, I reckon there's full-time people sitting around at movie studios and saying, oh, look, here's one. Write it down. Forward it off to Google. Can you take these guys out of the list? And anyway, they've finally relented and said, well, we'll just push them down search results. So
it's really curious and quite odd that the copyright owners would attack Google as the which are just an indexing service at this, and for these purposes, rather than the actual infringer themselves. Mm. It's a really odd corruption of
I think they're trying to work
common sense.
I think they're trying to work in tandem. This is just my opinion. I think they're trying to work in with them and get on their side because, after all, that's the reason why they're doing it because they are the biggest. They're just the search engine. And if people are doing the wrong thing by them, hey, can you push them down a bit?
Yeah, but it's like saying, to the people that produce the white pages to not print this guy's name because he's a known criminal.
And the problem with that is? Yes, you're right, Graham.
It's attacking the problem at a really odd point in the chain.
Yeah, Darren Hinch would have something to say about that. Anyway, I think it's time to go to the Odds Podcast and website of the week. Are you tensed up and ready to
read? I'm tensed up. I'm ready to go.
I know you've been in your sick bed, but you've obviously had plenty of time to read these
I've
silly articles.
I've had a lot
articles.
Of time on my hands.
Should be good. So we'll catch up after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
The Big T announced its prices for the national broadband network.
Ah!
And that's a risk you have to be aware of and you have to be prepared to take.
So you've unnecessarily highlighted that awkward part of the conversation.
DLC stands for downloadable content.
Yeah, that's what it gives you if you've already got the toolbar.
I want a portal gun.
I want a portal gun.
Telstra need to take more safeguards so that one piece of equipment can't take down a network.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
This week's gadget, Andrew, the Logitech Ultra Thin keyboard cover. Protects your iPad screen with a stylish...
Have you got one?
...slim aluminium cover. Not yet. ...that adds minimal weight to your tablet and features a built-in keyboard that pairs through Bluetooth. So it's a combined iPad cover and Bluetooth
keyboard.
Hang on, I'm
trying to picture this. So it folds up.
Yeah,
the normal usage
folds out.
And it folds down.
Angles the iPad up, and you can type on the real keyboard. When you're ready to type an email or watch a movie, the keyboard's built-in stand holds your iPad at the best angle.
Handy.
The external keyboard not only frees up screen space, he's doing it all in... He's doing like the...
Marcel Marceau.
His impression of how it all works. It not only frees up screen space on your iPad, it also allows you to work faster by using shortcuts for commands you use most often, such as copy, paste, undo, many more. Plus, you get 6 month battery life on a full charge out of the keyboard.
How well do you type on those things? You know, like on a normal keyboard, it's good
feel.
It's
pretty good. It's not too bad. Not too bad at all.
Because I've often wondered about those sort of like roll-out keyboards. Graham's shaking his head. There is a microphone there, Graham.
RRP is $99.95.
They're not good?
For more information, go to Logitech.com.
Oh.
That's our gadget, Andrew. Logitech's ultra-thin keyboard cover.
Okay.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Usually Graham's poised at this point of the program to type in the website.
Come on, give it to me, baby. I'm poised.
www.downforeveryoneorjustme.com.
What's that?
Down for everyone.
Oh, it's down for Graham at the moment. Yeah, it's me.
It's down for Graham. Have you ever wondered if a website's down or if it's just you?
Yes.
Down for everyone.
Or just me.
Oh, look, it's already there in my
browser. .com. If you're wondering if a website's down for just you or if it's down for everyone, go to downforeveryonejustme.com. If you can't see down for everyone just or you or just me.com, it's probably, maybe the whole internet's down for you.
Is google.com down for everyone or is it just me?
Well, why don't you find out? Why don't you ask it?
All right, I'll click or just me.
There's a few of these around.
It's not you. Google looks fine from here. Oh, that's handy, isn't
it? That's handy, yeah. Yeah, there are a few of these around. It's a variation on a theme, but this one works quite well.
I'm going to try Tech Talk Radio, because it was down during the week. Let me tell you.
Was it?
TechTalkRadio.com.au.
Is this down for everyone or just me?
Yeah, no, with the DNSing issue. It's just you. Tech Talk Radio is up. Thank you. Good to know, isn't it?
It's a relief.
Yeah.
That's our website, Andrew.
Oh,
that's a good website. I've used it more than once.
I'm going to bookmark that one and keep it in my tools of...
Yep, it's a good one to have.
It's a
really good quick sanity check.
It's just
to see.
A second opinion website, isn't it? Down for everyone or just
so,
me.
It's so simple. It's just text on the screen. I like that.
Yeah.
It's not as if it's going to chew lots of bandwidth up or anything like that.
No, just simple, works.
Thanks, Dr. Ron. It's not down, it's up.
That's a one. Woohoo!
Tech Talk Radio, app of the week.
Thank you, Prime Meridian, for this week's suggestion. Tunnel Bear is this week's application. Teams, says Prime, with all the talk around geo-blocking VPNs to access the UK and USA country residents' content, e.g. BBC iPlayer, I thought this is great for those listeners wanting a simple but effective app. TunnelBear.com requires no setup from the user. Sign up, download and run to access 500 megabytes per month for free, or for just $4.99 US per month, you have unlimited access. Simple to use, the app has two switches, on and off. And US and UK. No DNS setup is required, unlike alternatives like Unblock Us. There is a Twitter promo that can give you an extra 1 gigabyte each month for free.
If you advertise them, I guess.
Note, it only gives you US or UK as location options. Choose Prime.
But that's all you need. You've got Doctor Who is starting on the BBC very shortly. Their next run is coming up. There's an excuse. And then also on September the 27th, The Big Bang Theory returns to CBS, 7 o'clock central.
So you need tools like this in your arsenal.
Yes.
That's your application, Andrew. Tunnel Bear.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Ma, the meatloaf!
Wrong. James wrong.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Are you sick of seeing your friends' baby photos in your Facebook timeline?
I don't have Facebook, so I don't have a timeline, but... Graham? Ask someone who cares.
No, I'd never look at my Facebook timeline.
A New York-based writer and two of his friends have come up with an extension for Google's Chrome web browser called Unbaby Me.
What? Had to come, didn't it?
That zaps irksome infants from your newsfeed and replaces them with...
Irksome infants?
Cats.
Who ran this?
Lolcats. Oh, that's even better.
You can customise the extension to turn the babies into pugs or bacon or anything you please, actually, provided you can find an image-based RSS feed for it. The extension's baby detector isn't foolproof.
What does it do? Facial characterization?
No, it works by searching for keywords in photo captions.
Ah.
So it will miss uncaptioned babies.
Oh.
But the keywords are easily changed, so if you don't mind babies in general but want to be spared from seeing particular friends' babies, you can enter their names instead.
Babies are really beautiful for those that they're born into the families, but other than that, Really?
Unbaby.me is the name of the extension. I thought that was...
How did you come across that, or is that a story I shouldn't actually ask? I
shouldn't ask.
Okay, I won't.
Happy birthday, Andy B, for tomorrow, by the way.
Well, we got to mention he'll be happy about that. He's in our chat tonight.
He is.
If you weren't in our chat, why not? No excuse.
Long-time friend of the program.
He is. Yes. All right, I guess that's about it for tonight's show, isn't it?
That is all. That's all I have.
And have you got any other great little stories there? Because you've spent a bit of time surfing the net, because that's what you do when you're crook. You must have come across...
No, I spent a lot of time sleeping, actually.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, it must have been really bad.
It was. It was not good. It was horrible.
You get those awful diseases about this time. What disease? Colds?
It wasn't a cold.
Flus.
It was the real flu. And it was...
Was it?
Yes. Couldn't walk.
Yeah, do
horrible.
You get shots, or do you just... Obviously not.
Had shots.
That's
and
probably how he got the flu.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, they shoot the influenza directly into your bloodstream. Yeah.
Oh, well, and Lynn's has come down with something tonight too, so hopefully she'll be back on deck next week, which will be all exciting.
Confident of that.
Anyway, so we've got lots to look forward to. September is a big month in technology. We've got Windows 8 coming out. We've got iOS's coming out.
Spring will be sprung.
Yeah, there's hardware coming out from the majors.
In the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah, it will be as they go into their autumn. Lyd will return from the United States to Australia.
Our US correspondent, Lydia Davis, is going to be coming back.
I think she's in Paris at the moment. I think I was seeing some of her tweets as she's running around the place.
She's not coming back the most direct way.
No, she's coming back the long way, to be quite honest.
She's going by Paris.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, such is life. All right, enough of us for the day. We'll return same time next week. All things going according to plan. Plans in this organisation seldom go as we expect, but nonetheless, we always seem to manage to turn up each and every week, don't we, Dr.
Ron? We do. If you want show notes from this week's program, you want to know what's coming up next week, make sure you subscribe to our email newsletter. The details are on the website.
All right, guys, that's it. Same time next week. Until then, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the 2-hour version or access the 1-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03-8682-9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget, you can follow the panellists on Twitter, join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat, and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.